This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Bite-sized climate action is a series of fun, flexible, and immersive short online modules designed by experts in the conservation field to inspire Malaysian youth to act for the climate. From forest to food to electricity, uniquely Malaysian videos, podcasts, quizzes, and more are provided to demystify the science of climate change and empower everyone to be the change that they want to see. So I'm going to find out more about this from political scientist Dr. Helena Varkey and Dr. Matthew Ashfold, who is an atmospheric scientist, and they are both part of the team behind this initiative. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Thank you. All good. Thanks.
Hi, Juliet.
Hello. Nice to have you both on the show. So, before we get to bite-sized climate action, maybe let's talk a little bit about, this climate crisis that we have and how young people have actually, they've been talking about it for decades, right? But I think we're seeing a lot more of a lot more from this latest generation of protesters, right? They seem to be a bit more louder and perhaps a bit more coordinated than their predecessors. Would you agree with that? And if so, why do you think that is?
I agree. Yeah, the current young generation, they do seem to be louder and more coordinated. And I would say at the heart of that is a growing sense of urgency about this climate crisis. Like you say, scientists have been warning that climate change has been happening for a long time, for decades now. Mm-hmm. But this thing is building and building. We can see that the impacts of climate change are getting worse. The world is getting warmer and warmer. We see fires and heat waves and flooding worldwide. And so it's obvious there's an urgent need to act. And that means acting in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, the things that are causing the climate change. Mm-hmm. But so far, the action is not in line with what's needed, with the urgency. Governments have agreed in the Paris Agreement that they would like to limit global warming to a reasonable level. Mm-hmm. And they've started to make pledges about greenhouse gas emissions that should help to achieve that. But the pledges so far are not ambitious enough.
Yeah.
All countries need to do more, Malaysia included. And I think the youth are aware of that. They can see that. And from their perspective, the longer we wait to act, the faster we need to do the action. And so it's passing more and more of a burden to them. And so I think they're understandably angry with the adults. And
who've messed it all up for them, really, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I would agree. They're well coordinated, and social media, I think, is a big part of that.
Because I think, they know how to use it. They know how to actually use the visibility that social media gives, to create a sort of like a feedback loop, would you say, maybe?
Yeah, I would agree. Yes.
Okay. Helena, anything you wanted to add to that?
I would definitely agree. And I think the tools are all there for the youth, and they're being really smart about it. And it's been really amazing to see what they have been able to do with just the internet, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, there was an article that I was reading, Helena, and that one said that Greta Thunberg and, all these other young climate campaigners, they're not the conventional sort of tree-hugging environmentalists that, we kind of knew from the past, right? But they're tackling climate change as a matter of global justice, right? And people are saying that framing is more effective than, just sending out a purely environmental message, What do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. Justice is a very important framing tool for this whole wider buy-in for climate action, because I think everybody would agree that justice is a widely held value. Most people do believe in the importance of justice. But we don't often think about the environment in a justice perspective. So I think the focus of it from that perspective is really useful now. There's a lot of different aspects of justice, actually, in this climate crisis. If there's time, I would like to just quickly touch on three. The first one is intergenerational justice. So obviously, this is what Matt talked about, a sense of frustration that the youth will have to inherit this mess that we've left them. But more interestingly for Malaysia is the international justice. The Malaysian angle, we are a developing country. So there's this concept of common but differentiated responsibilities for addressing climate change. So this differentiates countries at different stages of development. But we in Malaysia is developing really fast. So the question is, how will our view of the climate crisis change? Let's say when we achieve our ASEAN 2020 of being a developed nation, and do we need to actually wait for this to happen before we start thinking about more seriously about what we can do as a country? And finally, there's the intranational justice. So there's a tendency that you always compare country to country, like what number is Malaysia in certain emission categories. But even within the country, different people contribute more or less to climate change. Different people are affected differently. If you look globally, the richest 1% emit more than double the emissions of the poorest half of society. And very similarly in Malaysia, I believe this would be the same case as well. And of course, the poorest are the least able to adapt to the climate crisis. So I think this idea that there's some inherent unfairness in how the climate crisis is unfolding makes people very much more passionate about fighting and righting these injustices. So it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, both of you are educators, right? And I think education is really something that is key in tackling the wider climate crisis. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Education is so important. We want to give youth the tools and the knowledge that they need to basically help them to help us also basically in the future. We as a group, we believe that permanent education in terms of climate education should be integrated in all subjects in our education system, because climate change is connected to everything. It's a complex systems problem, and this will be a problem that's going to be sticking with us when the young people grow up, when they start working, when they start having their families. And of course, if you look back to the SDGs, climate education is part of SDG 13, which is climate action. And that calls for integration of climate knowledge into primary, secondary, and tertiary level. So with our experience with this project, we talked to a lot of youth as well, and they told us their own experience of what they experienced learning about climate in Malaysian curriculum. And they say that it's being done. You do talk about the environment in school, but it's done sort of in a haphazard manner. For example, in Bahasa class, you would have to write an essay about the environment. And in Agama class, you would discuss what the Quran says about the environment. But it's not properly integrated with each other. So it's not really internalized, and it's hard to say whether this actually translates into action. And we've also heard the issue where teachers are not given as much training, especially if, let's say, you're a language teacher. How much do you expect to know unless you are properly trained for it? And at the university level, which is where me and Matt, we teach, there are compulsory subjects that all students have to take. At UM, students have to take courses on entrepreneurship, social engagement, philosophy, and civilization. And I believe it's similar in Nottingham. All these courses are very important, of course, but we can see that there's no course on environment or on climate change, even though that it is the most pressing issue of our time.
I'm just curious, Matt, I'm assuming you studied in the UK, right? Or you grew up in the UK. Am I right in saying that?
Yes.
How is the education system like for you? I mean, is there like a concerted sort of like, okay, environmental education for you? Because I mean, Helena and I from our Malaysian school system, we both know there wasn't. Just curious what it's like in the UK.
Yeah, good question. I fear my age is going to count against me here. it's quite a long time since I was at school. I think if I go back to when I was at school, which was 20 years ago and more, I don't remember climate change coming up very often. But obviously, I'm not up to date.
Okay. All right. Just curious. I mean, because I think even for... And Helena, you know, when did you sort of get the awakening about, you know, environmental issues? I mean, look at you. You're a political scientist now. But, you know, how did that actually get sparked for you personally?
Actually, it reflects our education. It's happened quite late in life. In university level, when I joined a student conference and there happened to be a group on looking at environmental issues, and I happened to have been put into that group. And that's when it all started. So it's quite accidental. There wasn't really a great awareness when I was growing up, and I feel that really was very unfortunate. But luckily, hopefully it happened not too late, and I'm trying my best now to be a better world citizen, yeah, through environmental efforts like this.
Yes.
We're all trying, yeah?
Yes, that's why Bite-Sized Climate Action has come about. But before we get into that, you know, Matt, this whole thing, you know, the climate crisis, everything is really quite overwhelming, isn't it? And it's, you know, as we said earlier, it's certainly not the fault or the responsibility of the young ones, right? But they are going to have to deal with the repercussions, right? I mean, they are going to have to deal with the effects. You know, just dealing with your students and you know, the people, the youth that you speak to, are you sort of seeing more optimism in them or determination, or is it just pessimism, you know, when it comes to tackling the climate crisis?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think overwhelming is the right word. When you start to think about it deeply, you can easily get overwhelmed, and it can be a scary thing to think about, this thing looming over your future. That's definitely been my experience as well. And so I think it's right that people acknowledge those types of feelings. And then from there, I think it's really important to emphasize and support young people with what they can do. I think that's one of the real keys to dealing with that type of overwhelming feeling. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the younger people that I engage with, I think there's a real mix of feelings, which probably is consistent with being an overwhelming sense, right? There are different things going on at different times. And so, you know, on the optimistic side, I think there are some young people doing really amazing, inspiring things, like Greta Thunberg, who you've already mentioned, and that's fantastic to see. And young people can be really powerful influences of older generations as well. They can be really powerful agents of change. But again, at the same time, without knowing concretely what they can do, I think students can also feel more pessimistic. And so, yeah, there's probably a mixture of feelings going on.
Mm-hmm. I think just to add to what Matt has said, the thing that we also have to not forget is that there are a lot of people or a lot of students who are neither optimistic or pessimistic, but they just don't really care and they don't have that awareness yet either way. So if you're pessimistic, at least you are thinking about it and you are feeling overwhelmed. So these are the people who we could probably just help to nudge to make them feel a bit more confident. But I think the people who don't care, the people who don't wake up and sort of think about their choices in with regards to their environment, these are the people who we really have to target and try to engage with. And so this is our challenge here, I think, today.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Dr. Helena Varkey. She's a political scientist. And Dr. Matthew Ashfold, he's an atmospheric scientist. And they're both also educators. And they're both also behind this initiative, which is called Bite-Sized Climate Action, which kind of wants to make the whole climate crisis something that we can attack together in an easier sort of way, I suppose. And after this quick break, we're going to come back and find out how exactly they've made this program to make climate action personal. So that's coming up after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today are Dr. Helena Varkey, she's a political scientist, and Dr. Matthew Ashfold, he's an atmospheric scientist, and they're both part of the team behind an initiative called Bite-Sized Climate Action, which has been designed by experts in the conservation field to inspire Malaysian youth to act for the climate. So, you know, before the break, we were talking about how people are feeling either pessimistic or, I mean, and as you mentioned, Helena, the worst thing is probably if they're feeling apathetic about it, right? And we need to kind of get them to change because, of course, this is a crisis that's going to hit every single one of us at some point. Just looking at COVID-19, right, and the pandemic that we're currently facing, do you think that has spurred youths to speak up even more about the climate crisis and, you know, environmental conservation issues because of the link between, you know, zoonotic diseases and what we're facing right now? Matthew, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the links between pandemic and climate change, there are probably lots of different things we could say, and we need to be a bit cautious about how we make those connections. In terms of how it's affected youth climate movements and pushing for action in terms of environmental conservation, my sense is that probably it's been a bit of a hindrance. I think the pandemic has really affected young people in lots of different ways. It's affected their education, their social lives. And so some of the momentum they've been building up, for example, the climate strikes, a lot of that relied on doing things in person, protesting physically. Yeah. And those pictures going around the world, I think, are really powerful. And having to transfer most of that activity to a digital environment, I'm sure, is a challenge. That said, you know, if anyone's going to be able to do it, it's the younger people who are tech savvy. And I guess we hope that the bite-sized climate action, it's an online resource, and we hope that I'll be part of empowering them in the digital space.
Okay, all right. And speaking of bite-sized climate action, let's find out more about that now. It is, of course, as I mentioned, an initiative to make climate action personal, right? How would you guys describe this initiative?
Yeah, so our bite-sized climate action is our little project as educators on climate change. As educators are probably guilty of not focusing enough on what we can do to work towards solutions. So we usually emphasize either the background science like Matt or what is existing policy like me, but not really enough about action, not really talking seriously, engaging with our students about what they can go back home and do. So this is the gap that we're trying to fill with this project. If just talking about climate action, there's two types of actions to address climate change. Number one is mitigation, which basically stops the causes or reduces greenhouse gas emissions. And number two is adaptation, which reduces the effects. For bite-sized climate action, we are focusing on the first, which is mitigation. Mm-hmm. And we want to drive home the message that even though climate change may seem like this huge problem driven by huge corporations and huge governments, there are still a lot of small, concrete things that you can do as a person, that the youth can do as a person, or anyone actually, which cumulatively will add up to something positive for our lives in Malaysia and for the planet. So we focus both on personal mitigation actions and also on empowerment, how youth or how anyone can lead the change by influencing others in their sphere and also hold governments and corporations more accountable. And of course, these two are linked. If you yourself are showing a good example, it's much easier for you to influence others as well. So this is a concept that we are pushing through, this concept of making climate action personal.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you guys saw a gap, right? Is that how the idea came out? I mean, yeah, tell me why you saw the need for it.
Well, I think that the idea came when we saw a call for proposals on a topic of communicating science for climate action, which is sponsored by the British High Commission in Kuala Lumpur, and supported by EcoNights, which is a local environmental NGO. And quite quickly, we came together as a group and we thought this was a great opportunity to go beyond, like Helena says, beyond the normal things that we're covering in classes and to better encourage concrete climate action among our students, to take it from the classroom into their day-to-day lives in the outside world. And I think we're probably also conscious, this is at least what I've been told, there might sometimes in Malaysia be more of an emphasis on memorizing content and information and less on practical application. And again, we really wanted to address that angle. And we also got quite a lot of inspiration from a very recent survey of youth in Malaysia by UNICEF, specifically on climate change. And there's widespread kind of interest and awareness of climate change as an issue, but maybe they don't always fully understand the basic scientific concepts, and importantly, might not know how they can act to tackle climate change. What can they do? And so that really also emphasized that there's this gap, this survey of the Malaysian youth. Also in the survey, the respondents were saying, we get lots of information from social media and from websites. And so that was a hint to us that this is the kind of medium we should be trying to use.
Okay, excellent. And, you know, just looking at how you've structured bite-sized climate action, right? It's actually been put into different modules. Tell me how these modules work, you know, and can you walk me through all the different modules that you guys have actually created?
Sure. So far, we have 6 modules. We are hoping, of course, to expand this. But at the moment, we've managed to develop 6 modules. They are on sort of the main big issues that we believe are particularly important at this moment for Malaysia: electricity, transport, food, forests, trash, as well as a change module, which is more towards action, influencing action. Mm-hmm. And for each module, we developed several types of content. So we have quizzes, we have videos, infographics, podcasts, we have TikToks, reading lists, as well as resources, which are like NGOs or community projects that people can really get involved in and get their hands dirty. The concept, the special concept we believe of these modules is that even though there's a series of 6, they are standalone. Mm-hmm. which means that you do not have to complete the whole course to benefit or to learn about climate action. If you just look at one, you just focus on one, let's say you pick up electricity, you are interested in electricity, that will give you the information you need to act on the climate within that sphere. And each type of content is also bite-sized, as the name implies. Small bite-sized pieces. For example, our videos are just about 3 to 4 minutes long. There's one or two simple infographics, and there's about 8 short objective questions for each quiz. And we hope that this sort of bite-sized approach makes it less threatening, less intimidating for the youth who, like we discussed, may feel a little bit overwhelmed. So if you actually visit our website and you just click on one particular module, we have structured it in a way that is very logical in how you can go through it. So for example, the first thing you see would be a pre-module quiz where you can test what knowledge you already know and you'll get a score. Let's say you get 6 out of 8, for example.
Okay.
And then what you do next is you explore the module's videos, infographics, podcasts, and TikToks. And then you can go and do our post-module quiz, which is basically the same questions, and see whether you can improve your score. So we're coming to this gamification kind of thing with the climate education approach.
Nice.
Next, you can dig deeper if you're interested in certain aspects. We have a reading list that is divided into easy, medium, and hard. So depending on your confidence, you can read a bit more about it. We want to encourage, independent search for knowledge. And then, like I said, we have our resources where you can really get involved and connect with people in your community that is interested in similar areas. And of course, after that, we hope that you will do more modules and learn more from all of this.
Mm-hmm. That sounds excellent, really all-encompassing. And why were these topics or modules chosen in particular, you know? And can anyone of any age group sort of tackle them? I mean, is there something for everyone?
Yes, maybe the answering the second part of the question first. We hope that there is content within each of the modules that is appropriate for lots of different ages. So some of the things might be more simple for the younger age groups, and the more complicated or in-depth information might be more appropriate for the university level students. So we hope there is content that is going to be useful for lots of different ages. And then why the different topics? Well, they all map onto to major areas in our lives where we can do something in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Helena used this word, mitigation, trying to address the causes of climate change. And so the first 5 topics, that's electricity, transport, food, forests, trash, there are all different actions we can do in those areas that the science tells us can be the most impactful actions, the things that can reduce our emissions the most.
Right.
And that's really important that we focus on the things that make a big difference. And then the 6th module that Helena mentioned, the change module, that's a bit different. That's more about going beyond your own actions and amplifying what you're doing amongst your social network, at school, at work. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. And there's so much there. Like, I went through the website, you know, there's a wealth of information, that you guys have drawn together, you and your collaborators, of course. How are you hoping to disseminate all of this information to the public? I mean, there's so much there. It's a wonderful resource. You've drawn together so much, but now how do you get people to come there and find out more as well?
Thank you. We're very happy to hear that.
I'm like, so, very kiasu. I want to sit and do the quizzes and see how much I actually know. I'm very excited.
Yeah, a lot of our respondents actually really like the quizzes. So I think that's a really important element to get people really hooked on it. But anyway, back to your question. We basically have 2 prongs of how we want to disseminate our information. So one is directly to the youth. So we have all of our social media pages. We have Facebook, we have Twitter, Instagram, and we also have TikTok, where we believe students and youth spend most of their time when they are online, and this is how we want to reach directly to them. For example, one thing which I think is really unique about our modules is our TikTok account, and I think that's really relevant right now. TikTok is hugely popular among Malaysian youth, and this is, I think, a great entry point for them to look at our TikToks and hopefully be inspired to look at our other content. And if you want to talk about bite size, TikTok is really bite size. It's only 60 seconds for each video. Mm. And we managed to put quite a lot of things in 60 seconds. Hopefully that will be useful for the youth out there. Our second sort of prong is indirectly through educators. So we are hoping that teachers and lecturers will adopt parts of our modules into their classroom. That's why we have designed it as standalone. So bits and pieces can be taken as relevant. Whenever something relevant comes up in your syllabus, you can pull certain things in and share it with your students. And even if lecturers and teachers cover just one module in their classroom, we hope that this will inspire the students to go back home and look at the other modules that we have. So I think with these two combined approaches, we hopefully will be able to reach a good size population to hopefully inspire them to be more climate action oriented. Mm-hmm.
And I think variety is the key, right? That's really what, you know, there's something for everyone. Like you said, you've designed it as such. And that's really going to, I mean, everybody's going to have something there, whether it's a TikTok video, whether it's reading a long paper. Yeah, something for everyone. And, you know, you alluded to the fact that there's a section for educators as well, right, Helena? Either of you, you know, can you tell me how they can actually use the info? How can they adapt it for their own classes or curriculums? You know, how can they go about doing that?
Yeah, sure. So maybe one of the first things to say is the website content is all there and it's free for anyone to use. And that's, you know, really important. We hope that educators will think about taking advantage of that. On our website, we have a page for educators. And within that page, we have some detailed example lesson plans for four different levels of students. So primary, secondary, non-science university and science-based university. And we give some ideas for the sorts of topics which could be linked into our modules. So for example, you might be wanting to teach something in school about people's diets and the food that the kids are eating. Mm. And that could be a chance to connect to our food module. And so there are really important connections between climate change and all these different parts of our lives. So a low carbon diet will tend to be much healthier than the alternative higher carbon diet. And so those are some of the examples that we highlight on the website, the page for educators. We also have what we call a Climate Science 101 page, which is additional to the six modules. Yep. And educators can go there, all their students can go there and get some of the background information on climate change. Again, we've designed it to be quite simple and bite-sized, but hopefully we're covering the really key points to be aware of.
Okay, excellent. And, you know, let's say somebody has completed all the different modules that you've prepared, you know, do you have any sort of hope for what they're going to do with all that information that they've gathered?
Yes. I'm thinking about this myself at the moment because I'm trying to come up with a package for teaching based on the content myself. And so I'm designing a module which would make use of all the content, and students at my university from any discipline would be able to cover the content over the course of a semester. And they can interact with the content online, interact with each other in forums and social media. And yeah, so I'm thinking carefully, what do I want these students to be able to do at the end of my course? And so probably a few key things. They know personally what they can do to effectively reduce their own greenhouse gas emissions. And maybe more importantly, they feel kind of prepared and empowered to talk with other people about what they're doing and to hopefully influence them to act as well. And that could again be in terms of cultural norms among friends and family, and it can also be in a more civic space, so with engaging with schools, workplaces, local governments, knowing how to do that and feeling empowered to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, you know, just to have some sort of action from everything that you've learned, right? Use that information in any way that you can, really. There's so many different ways of tackling it. Find something that works best for you, right?
Yeah, we also really think that it's important connecting with this idea of influencing others, important for the youth to use their social media, mm-hmm, for this cause as well. Mm-hmm. So one of the other things that we have we are encouraging through our content is for those who have done the modules to share their own climate action on social media. So we have a hashtag that we're hoping that everyone will use, hashtag bite-sized climate action. Okay. So to build that momentum, when you see other people sharing their own actions, hopefully then it will inspire others as well. So that's something that we hope that will contribute a little bit to the Malaysian climate movement.
Okay. Congratulations. You know, it's so well done. And, you know, hopefully lots of people, you know, start utilizing it and, you know, start doing those modules. But tell me a little bit about the folks behind this initiative. You know, besides the both of you, it must have been a huge effort to get all of this done together.
Yeah, it was a great, very concentrated effort. It was actually done within 2.5 months.
Wow, well
done. We were given
done.
Quite a short timeline, but I think that really pressured us and pushed us to get things done and not delay. So we have another three educators with us on the team, which is Dr. Sheba Chinoli, which is also an atmospheric scientist. She's based in the Department of Geography in UM. We also have Amira Firdaus, Dr. Amira Firdaus, who's a social scientist and a media expert. She's also the deputy director for ADEC, which is UM's learning center. So she really helped a lot with about how to make sure that these modules were really designed in such a way to support learning in an effective manner. Mm-hmm. And we also have Dr. Zida Fatima, who is a sustainability scientist in UM, and she's at the root of a lot of UM sustainability initiatives. So I think we have a great team that is really the right people to bring this forward. And I would like to also add that another, like sort of the other, or rather the people who also supported us, we had a group of great students and former students that helped us with content creation. Mm-hmm. For example, our TikToks were produced by two very talented undergraduate students, Widad and Mariam, and they created everything, the idea, the script, everything from the first second to the 60th second, and they were great. They were so passionate about it, and we hope that when people see them, they are the same age, they are in the same situation in life, they will also be inspired to do the same. So we think that it's a really unique project because it's a good collaboration between us as educators and also youth. And we think that we have hopefully successfully created content that would really appeal to the youth in a way that it is what they want to see. And in fact, in the very beginning of this project, we had a focus group discussion where we called youth together and asked them, what do you want? And this, a lot of the ideas that came out of that were from this focus group. And as far as possible, we tried to make sure to give them what they wanted on their wish list.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. And because you're dealing with digital natives here, right? So it's a completely different sort of approach that you need to take as well. And it's great that you actually got their feedback and listened to it basically and give them what they wanted. So that's really excellent. How are you guys going to take this initiative forward? What are some plans you know, in the pipeline?
Yeah, so we definitely have plans. So like I said, this was a quick project that we managed to miraculously get off the ground in a very short time. So we're hoping that it doesn't end here. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we did a test run among 50 Malaysian university students when we first launched. And we got a lot of ideas on how to make this even better. So based on their feedback, we are looking into translating all of our content into BM, Bahasa Malaysia, and possibly other major Malaysian languages. And also we're looking to make our content more accessible for people with disabilities. So this was something that was brought up in the feedback sessions, which we think is really excellent. Mm. In terms of platform, we're also looking for a permanent platform for our project, either as a paid website or as a formal course on an online learning platform, like FutureLearn or online learning. And a more permanent platform will allow us to hopefully expand into more modules in the future. We're also thinking about certification because we also found that students really like to get certificates for things. It's useful for them to go for their job interviews and such. So we're hoping that we'll be able to put some sort of certification system in. If you finish all the modules, we can certify you. Yeah. And I think this will be very useful to encourage youth who fall into that don't care category to engage with us anyway. And hopefully that will inspire them to truly internalize this over time.
Are you looking for more collaborators? You know, there's so much more that can be done as well, right? As you're saying, you've got lots of plans, lots of ideas. Are you looking for more collaborators?
Yes, we would love to hear from educators or youth groups who would like to incorporate our modules into their classes or their projects. If you feel like you'd like some more guidance on what what to do, how to use the content, we'd be very happy to try and help in any way we can. And if you're an educator who's already done something with one of the modules, then we'd love to hear from you as well. We'd like to build up the section on our website, which is for educators. We'd like to feature you as a case study of using our content and act as a motivation for others. That's very much kind of consistent with our philosophy of influencing others. And I guess also we'd be very happy to collaborate with any donors who might like to support our plans moving forward, including in some of the ways that Helena's just mentioned, making the content more inclusive, enabling certification that a lot of young people might value. And so, yes, we're very much looking to collaborate with lots of different types of people as we continue to work on the project. And I guess the best ways to get in contact would be through our website. There's a place you can get in contact with us on the website. You could email us bitesizeclimateact@gmail.com. I think these links will be available with the page related to this podcast. And so and also through social media, there are quite a few different ways that you could get in contact with us. And we'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really wonderful that you're also planning to try and make this more inclusive, right? Because I remember speaking to other local activists, right? And, you know, from speaking to people that they were dealing with, regular Malaysians, a lot of the information is in English, right? And that's a problem because, you know, they only understand Bahasa or they only understand other languages. So I think that's also something that you guys might be looking towards to doing as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. And this links back to our social justice conversation earlier, right? So yeah. Certain people from certain levels or strata of society, they may not be able to access the education or the knowledge that they need. So I think this is a very important exercise for us to address that. And that's why inclusivity is one of the first things that we're planning to do. We had very limited time in the beginning, but now that we have time to sort of take it easy and take it properly in the direction where we want. These are all great opportunities for us to practice what we preach and strive for more justice in the climate fight.
Okay, excellent. So again, you know, if anyone's listening and they'd like to get in touch, well, just head to the website, I suppose, right? That's the easiest one. And all the links are there. That website is bitesizeclimateact.wixsite.com/Malaysia. Don't worry, we'll put the link in the podcast page as well. But of course, follow Bite Size Climate Action on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. Am I right?
Yes, okay. Those are our social media. Thank you so much.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today.
Thank you, Juliet.
Thanks for having us, Juliet.
My pleasure. I've been speaking to Dr. Helena Varkey and Dr. Matthew Ashfold. Helena is a political scientist and Matthew is an atmospheric scientist. And they are also both part of the team behind an initiative called Bite Size Climate Action. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app or at bfm.my/earth. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.